Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the global financial crisis right after this. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, which was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, President Bush said that what Americans wanted was jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle. It's measured in property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It isn't measured in employment. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. There isn't any money in public business, and there isn't any money in jobs, jobs, jobs. That's why I contend that it's time that we learn how to cash in on our inheritance and how to collect those benefits of the old covenant contract and to get those benefits paid in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's real property instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on our CD Home School for Adults. That's our business school. And then, while you're at it, why don't you order our free general law CD package at the same time? Didn't cost you anything. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free of charge. So you can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our webpage. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org. O-R-G, and then go to the archives. All right, last time when we finished up, I said we'll take a look at 19 facts about deindustrialization of America that's going to blow your mind. 19 facts here that tell us that this game is already over. Now, here in the United States, and I'm sure that around the world, wherever you live, your government is trying to reassure you. They're trying to tell you that, well, this is temporary. We've always been able to pull out of this in the past. Now, give us a little time. The green shoots are starting to come up, and we'll get this recession behind us, and we'll have full employment, and the good times will roll again. I think that this time is a little different than it was, say, in 1929 or 1958 or 1992. There's some different statistics, some different events that have transpired. And the powers that be, the PTB, the powers that be, they're about to slam the gate shut on this New World Order. They've been working long and hard at it. They've got the thing all scoped out, and they're ready to make their move. And I think this is the big move. Now, what that spells, then, is the destruction of the United States of America, Canada, Australia, and continental Europe. In other words, the Western world is coming to an end. Well, it's coming to an end in the way that we've known it in the past. That doesn't mean that the people are going to be deported, you know, from France to Brazil or something. It just means that there's going to be a different government. There's going to be a different economic system. Things are going to change. I mentioned that to you last time. We've got some pretty major changes coming just as a matter of evolutionary change in the business climate, the business community, the technologies available, like newspapers are on their way out, and so are landline telephones. But we could live without those. We can live with those kinds of changes. It's like the automobile changing, you know, and they were making Stanley steamers, and the steamers, they weren't as popular, and they couldn't compete with the gasoline automobile, and so they disappeared. And we can live without steam-powered automobiles. But there are some things that we can't live without, and that's food, clothing, and shelter. And I mentioned to you the last time that there's another character, there's another player in this game that we have not been giving any attention to, and that's the creator of the universe. That's God. We're giving a lot of concern and a lot of lip, you know, to the United Nations, and they probably deserve it, and to China, and to even North Korea, and the United States, and the Federal Reserve Bank, and Ben Bernanke. You know, we spend a lot of time, effort, and energy watching the news and paying attention to what's going on around us. And we haven't been paying much attention to Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. They haven't been paying attention to Revelation 6, 17, or 18. Didn't pay any attention to Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. And as a result of that, we're pretty ignorant as to what's going on around us in real time. we've got blinders on. I pointed that out to you. I said, you know, the powers that be are using your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. They've got you running down rabbit trails. You don't have your mind on the real problem. And the real problem is economic. That's where, as old Bill Clinton said, hey, it's the economy, stupid. And George Bush and Barack Obama, they're a part of an agenda. They're a part of the New World Order regime. And that's where we're going. That's where we're headed. And the creator of the universe has a lot to say about this New World Order. He's not going to tolerate that. That it's going to happen. We are going to create this New World Order and a one world government. And he says for about 1 hour. Now, in the Bible, it talks about a year for a day in Numbers 14, for instance. You know, when it's talking about a year, it could refer to a year, 365 days. It can refer to a lunar year, 355 days. It can refer to a day, or it can refer to 1 year. Depends on the context. And we're getting down to that 3.5 days, that 3.5 years, that 1,290 days spoken of in Revelation, you know, where this great tribulation comes down on us. I think that's about where we're at and about where we're headed. Now, in order for us to pick up on that and to understand Bible prophecy, you need to be picking up your newspaper and listening to Jim Lehrer on the NewsHour and Katie Couric. But we also need to temper that with Joel Skousen and the World Affairs Brief, or with the International Forecaster, so that we don't get stampeded or we don't get led down a rabbit trail. Now, if you're of the opinion that this global financial crisis is well in hand and the green shoots are coming up and we're going to solve this problem, guess again. That's not in the offing. Sorry to report that. That isn't where we're headed. It's not what the powers that be want. It's not what the creator of the universe wants. It may be what you and I want, but we're not going to get what we want. And this is going to be handed to us whether we like it or not. And there's two other players here in the game, the powers that be, the Illuminati, and the creator of the universe. And these two groups, the occult groups, the black side, the dark side, and the creator, they've got a bitch going on, and those guys are going to prevail. And then ultimately, the creator is going to prevail over Satan, and is going to prevail over the New World Order. But meanwhile, back on the farm, you and I are left here in Isabella, Missouri, while all of this is going on. And this isn't going to be good for us. Let's start off here and take a look at 19 facts about the deindustrialization of the United States. It's going to blow your mind. The United States is rapidly becoming the very first post-industrial nation in the history of the world. All of the great economic empires eventually become fat and lazy, and then they squander the great wealth that their forefathers leave them. But the pace at which the United States is accomplishing this is absolutely amazing. Remember, it was America that was at the forefront of the Industrial Revolution. It was America that created the industrialization process and showed the world how to mass produce everything from automobiles to televisions to airplanes. It was the great American manufacturing base that crushed Germany and Japan back in World War II. But now what we're witnessing is the deindustrialization of the United States, where tens of thousands of factories have left the United States in just the last 10 years alone. And it's resulted in millions upon millions of manufacturing jobs that have been lost in that same period of time. Now, the United States has become a nation that consumes everything in sight and yet produces increasingly little. Now, did you know that our biggest export today is waste paper? I'm not kidding. The biggest export that we Americans sell to the world is waste paper. Yep, trash is the number one thing that we ship out to the rest of the world as we voraciously blow our money on whatever the rest of the world wants to sell us. Now, the United States has become bloated and spoiled. Our economy is now just a shadow of what it once was. And now, once upon a time, America could literally outproduce all the rest of the world combined. Today, that is no longer true. But Americans sure do consume more than anybody else in the world. And if this deindustrialization of America continues at its current pace, what possible kind of future are we going to be leaving to our children? Now, in the last program, I read you a little section here from Deuteronomy 28:53 to about verse 58, dealing with cannibalism. We're going to leave our children with cannibalism. Now, that's pretty tough medicine to take. I know most people sit there and laugh at you, but hell, they were sitting there laughing at Noah, you know, the day he got into the boat. People were laughing, you know, when people said the Titanic isn't unsinkable. Just because people laugh and scoff and make fun, all fools do that. And then the flood came and took them all away. They stop laughing. There comes a point in time, even the fool stops laughing when he's in his death throes. What we're trying to figure out here is, well, what in the hell are we going to do now to ameliorate the problems that we've already created. Now, I've mentioned this a time or two, but there was a guy named Ross Perot. You don't hear about him anymore, but Ross Perot's a billionaire down in Houston, Texas. Little guy with big floppy ears. But he's not stupid, and he said back in 1992, now he was running for president. Can you believe that? Joe Sixpack, Ross Perot, citizen running for president, said, hey, let me tell you where it's at here, kid. This thing is unsustainable, and then we've got to make some big changes, and I'm the guy to do it because I'm a businessman and an outsider. And so you know what we did with Ross Perot? We elected Bill Clinton, you know, the politician, the popular guy, good-looking guy. Ross Perot comes back a second time, and he says, hey, listen, let me tell you where it's at, and let me explain this to you. And we said, no, we're going to have Bill Clinton. And so Bill Clinton gave us NAFTA, CAFTA, and the World Trade Order, WTO, World Trade Organization, I guess they call it. Well, okay, well, once that was done, once we made our decision, and once we created the World Trade Organization and NAFTA and CAFTA, all right, we put the train on the track, and we sent it down the line. And here's the results. Okay, well now, every act has a conclusion. There's a result that comes from it. Now, if this is the result we wanted, sit back and relax, enjoy it, because this is what we've got. If this isn't what you had in mind, unemployment, foreclosure, and the loss of everything that you've got, well, you've already created that, and you're not going to change that. Now, what we need to do is we need to do something intelligent to see if we can't correct our mistake. You're not going to change the bad decisions you've already made, but what are we going to do from this point going forward? Well, in the Bible, the Creator says, well, okay, if you guys ever wake up to reality, start smelling the coffee, get your head on straight and your head out of your ass, then we can do something constructive about your problem, about your dilemma. But if you don't, then here's what I'm going to do to you. And I mentioned to you last time, I said, now what we're dealing with here is breach of contract. Now, these tens of thousands of businesses over the past 10 years, total 42,000 businesses, that's tens of thousands. These businesses, 75% of them employed 500 people or more. They were big businesses. Big business is 100 employees or more. That's a big business. Small business is 99 employees or less. Some businesses only employ 1, 2, 3, 5, maybe 10 guys. Take a Pizza Hut. Next time you walk into Pizza Hut, they'll have a guy cooking and a couple of girls, you know, cashier. There'll be about 4 or 5 people working in a Pizza Hut. Now, they got to have 2 shifts a day. Minimum 2 shifts, open 16 hours a day. So if you see 5 people in there, well, then there's 10. Now, there's an owner, probably a manager, that you don't see there all the time. So, you know, you got about 10, 12, 14 people that make their living off of this Pizza Hut restaurant. Now, when you close that business up, there goes 10, 12, 14 jobs. Now, when you close down a business that's got 100 employees, you know, then that impacts upon 100 families. Because all of those employees have mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers, wives and children. That it impacts upon a wider ring of people than that. Because the truck drivers that are delivering all of the product that goes to this Pizza Hut. All right, well, when you close about 10 of those, you can eliminate one truck driver job. So then here goes another guy. And this just starts building up. It mushrooms, you know, kind of like throwing a rock out into the water. And then, you know, you got this splash and a little plunk. And then you see rings develop out past that. And then they go out and out and out bigger and bigger. Well, this GFC, as they call it here in economic circles, the global financial crisis, has done just exactly that. Now, any great nation throughout history has been great at making things. So if the United States continues to allow its manufacturing base to erode at the staggering pace that we now see, how in the world can we, in the United States, continue to consider ourselves to be a great nation? We have created the biggest debt bubble in the history of the world in an effort to maintain a very high standard of living, which we have done so far. But the current state of affairs is not anywhere close to sustainable. Every single month, America goes into more debt, and every single month, America gets poorer as a result of it. Boys and girls, your debt does not make you richer. Now, mull that one over for a minute. It may be true that you went out and went into debt to buy that new car, and you're driving around in this new car. But you're not richer, you're poorer. What you've done here is you've pledged your labor to pay for this car over the next 4 or 5 years. This is called specific performance. You have pledged yourself to specific performance for a term of years. You know, you've got to get up in the morning now and go to work every day, punch the clock at 8 o'clock, and pay a portion of your paycheck every week to pay for this car. So you have enslaved yourself, and in addition to that, you've impoverished yourself to some degree. Now, as long as you're working and you can make your payments, you know, everything's fine. It's when you lose your job or your wife loses her job and you're unable to make all these payments for all these things that you've now overextended yourself for. You weren't overextended. If everything works fine, we're not overextended. But, you know, life is what it is. And not everything continues on forever. Things change. And because of that, we find ourselves in this global financial crisis. It's not just the United States, it's the whole world. Now, let's take a look at the Chinese. They measure their wealth in their manufacturing plants and jobs and GDP, and how much money do they have in the bank. So if you went over to China and you said, hey, what do you guys got? They'd say, wow, we got $4 trillion in the bank. Oh, God, that's really great. Where did you get this $4 trillion? Well, a bunch of it we got from the Americans. Oh, yeah, the Americans, that's a pretty wealthy country. Yeah, yep, they're right at the top. And how much of it do you have? Well, we've got about $1.6 trillion of American bonds. Oh, God, that's really good. $1.6 trillion. Are the Americans going to pay you the $1.6 trillion that they owe you? And if so, how are they going to pay? Uh-oh. You know, when you say, when are they going to pay and how are they going to pay? Well, I guess we will cash in our bonds and spend our money in America and buy Dell computers. Okay, that's good. And we'll spend some more of that money on Caterpillar tractors and John Deere, and then we'll bring those over here to China, which will constitute a trade for our big screen TVs and tennis shoes. Yeah, that's the way the system's designed, all right. And if it plays out that way, everybody will be happy. We got the big screen TVs and the television sets, and they'll trade their bonds for Caterpillar tractors and tennis shoes. But here's the kicker. See, in order for us to give them the Caterpillar tractors and the Dell computers, we have to have a manufacturing plant here in the United States manufacturing Dell computers, don't we? All right, now listen to this little ditty over here as it relates to the Dell company. See if I've got them here in front of me. The Dell company is in the process. I'm skipping ahead here a little bit until I find it. I can't put my finger right on it there. Well, let me tell you what it is. The Dell Computer Company, oh, yeah, here it is. Right here. Actually, it's number two. Dell Incorporated, one of America's largest manufacturers of computers, has announced plans to dramatically expand its operations in China with an investment of over $100 billion over the next decade. The Dell Company has announced that it will be closing its last large U.S. manufacturing facility in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, in November, and approximately 900 jobs will be lost. So there isn't going to be any Dell computers produced in the United States of America. The Chinese are not going to trade all of their IOUs for Dell computers manufactured in America because the Dell company is going to manufacture their computers over in China. So what is it that the Chinese are going to buy here? Well, they could come over here and buy a Big Mac. Where do we get the meat for the Big Macs? We import it from Argentina. Where do we get the tomatoes? From Mexico. And the pickles? From New Zealand. You see where we're going here, boys and girls? We Americans right now are consuming about $600 billion a year. It's been around $800. It may actually be around $800 billion. $600 to $800 billion. And we're exporting $200 billion. Can you picture this? We're importing $800 billion a year. We're exporting $200 billion a year. That's a $600 billion shortfall. At some point, we don't know where, it hasn't happened yet, but at some point, somewhere, at some date, the people around the world that are producing all of these goods for us are going to say, okay, well, pay us. Pay us with Caterpillar tractors. Pay us with Dell computers. Pay us with some stuff, Big Macs or whatever. And we don't have it, and we can't create it, and we can't pay it. So you Chinese people sitting over there with this $1.5 trillion worth of American paper, you are sitting on the IOUs of a deadbeat who cannot pay you even if he wanted to. I'm not sure we want to, but in addition to that, even if we wanted to, we couldn't. Now, what does that do to the solvency of China? They're insolvent just like we are. They are relying upon us to pay. Let me give you a quick illustration. Let's suppose I owe you $10,000. And you're relying upon me to pay you that $10,000. And that's because you owe $10,000 to somebody else. And that guy owes $10,000 to somebody else, who in turn owes that $10,000 to somebody else. Now, if I pay, everything's fine. I pay you, you pay your supplier, he pays his supplier, and on down the line, everybody gets paid. But what happens if I don't pay you that $10,000? Well, then you cannot pay your supplier. He cannot pay his supplier. And on down the line, and all of them go bankrupt. And that's where the world's headed. All the nations of the earth are going bankrupt all at the same time. And it's being led by the United States. So let's take a look here at the 19 facts about the deindustrialization of America that's going to blow your mind. Number one, the United States has lost about 42,400 factories since 2001. That's about 75% of the factories that employed 500 people when they were still in operation. So 42,400 factories have left the United States. Here's an example. Ted Kennedy was just irate as hell because in his state, Massachusetts, the Stanley Company, Stanley, they make tools like tape measures and levels and things like that. And Stanley is the Cadillac of tools. When you buy a Stanley tape measure, it's the top of the line. It's like a Rolls Royce. There's all kinds of other tape measures out there, but by God, when you're packing a Stanley now, you're at the top of the pecking order. So the Stanley Company one day wakes up and they say, well, we're going to move our operations. I don't know where they moved them, Philippines or someplace. We're going to move them. And Ted Kennedy was just irate as hell. Several hundred or several thousand employees at the Stanley Company were unemployed in his state of Massachusetts or Connecticut or wherever they were located, right there in New England. Now, let me show you what happened, and here's why. The Stanley 25-foot contractor's tape measure used to cost about $8-$9. One day I went over here to the Ace Hardware store and I walked in and I saw a yellow, it wasn't Mark Stanley now, but it was yellow. That was their color. And then it was a 25-foot contractor's tape measure for $3.65. Couldn't believe my eyeballs. So I took it down off the rack and I pulled it out and I looked at it and I said, Jesus, look at this. And I bought it. Took it home, used it. And it had two scales on it. It had the English scale and it had the metric scale on it. We English people were kind of nuts. We got our own measuring system. All the rest of you people in the world use the metric system. We don't. We got our own. And this has both of them on it. See, for $3.65. Now, when I got to looking at this, made in China, the package, made in China. I don't know who made it in China, whether it was the Stanley Company or somebody else, but it was a knockoff. It was as good as. It looked just like a Stanley tape measure, same size, everything about it looked like a Stanley tape measure. I think it was a counterfeit. Now, think of the Stanley Company. How in the hell can they pay $7 an hour, $10 an hour, $15, $20 an hour to Americans to make tape measures that they have to get $9, $10 for, when the Chinese are making the same damn tape measure and selling it for $3.65? Can you see where this is leading? All right, now 42,400 companies had the same problem that the Stanley Company had. And we all saw this coming back in the 1960s. And we kept voting for the Republicans and Democrats that said, we want free trade, we want free trade, we want free trade. So, okay, we voted them in, free trade, now we got it. Now, over in China, I showed you this the other day. You know, in China, they pay a garment worker 86 cents an hour, or 86 cents a day, I forgot. I guess it's 86 cents an hour, and 22 cents an hour in Cambodia. Hell, in the United States, we got to pay $7 an hour. When this happened, this free trade thing happened in Florida, it put all of the tomato growers in Florida out of business. They have to pay minimum wage, $7 an hour. But you can grow tomatoes in Hermosillo, Mexico, drive them across the border in a semi, duty-free, and they're producing them down in Mexico with all the chemicals, DDT, Agent Orange, that we can't use here in the United States. Paying their workers down there $2 an hour, we got to pay our $7. Can you see why the tomato industry is dead in America? The garlic industry, dead in America? The Stanley Tool Company, dead in America? Come on, guys, let's wake up and you know, maybe we've been smoking some heavy-duty grass for too long. Maybe it's time to shake ourselves awake. But anyway, there's where our dilemma is. That's what our problem is. Now, there's a solution to this, and it's called tariffs. But these political parties aren't going to go back to tariffs. There's a solution to this. It's called hard money, gold and silver. You can rest assured that Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan are going to sit still for that. So the politicians and the bankers and the big industrialists, they've got an agenda, and they've executed their agenda. And this is the result that we see from it. And then there's this third player, God, who comes into the picture and says, if you don't practice my law, here's what I'm going to do to you. Hey, boys and girls, we got the government working against us. We got big business working against us. And now we've got God Almighty himself working against us. Hey, as old William Bendix used to say, you know, back in the days of radio, what a revolting development this has turned out to be. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact disc. At the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, that doesn't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. So keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then we invite you to go to our website at georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the global financial crisis. And I'm reading from an article here that we pulled off the internet. Let's see if I've got a name and address here for it. This is from Betty Bible Roots at frontiernet.net. Changes are coming. I must read for everyone. So I'm getting the information that this lady wrote this down. It's Betty Bible Roots, all one word, at frontiernet, all one word, .net. All right, a few changes are coming. It's a must read. Now I showed you here the United States has lost 42,400 factories since 2001. About 75% of those factories employed more than 500 people when they were still in operation. And the Dell company, they're moving out. Last factory that they've got in the United States, up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Yeah, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. 900 jobs. Now, you've been reading about that. 900 jobs lost here, 900 jobs lost there. You know, we've been listening to this for years. And how much money is Dell going to spend in China? $100 billion. Hey, listen to this. Remember when General Motors was getting their bailout? Okay. And they borrowed, I forgot now, was it $30 billion? Something like that. So here's you and me, Joe Sixpack, out here driving truck and doing whatever the hell we're doing, paying our taxes and supporting it. Our government comes along and says, okay, well, we're going to give General Motors $30 billion, help bail them out, keep those guys, you know, we're protecting jobs in America. So General Motors takes, I think it was $2 billion, might have been more than that, but it was, you know, several billion dollars, and they moved their entire Buick division to China. So next year, in 2011, when you go down to buy a brand new Buick automobile, all of it's made in China. No American hands ever touched it. How do you like that? So while General Motors is borrowing money from you and me to keep their operation from going bankrupt, they're taking several billion dollars investing it in China so they can build their Buick cars in China. So there won't be any Americans building Buicks. Now, before long, that's what they're going to do with Chevrolets and Oldsmobiles and Pontiacs. And I guess they're not going to make Pontiac. They're eliminating that one, but Cadillac. You know, I say it's time for us to wake up and smell the coffee. This isn't coming back. In the last 10 years, 42,400 companies have moved to China or some other country. And that's because the conditions were ideal for them to move. The taxes were ideal for them to move. The labor costs were ideal for them to move. Now, do you believe for a minute that those companies are going to come back to the United States over the next 10 years? Do you think that the conditions, the favorable conditions that cause those companies to move to those foreign countries are going to be duplicated here in the United States? Do you think we're going to abolish OSHA and the EPA? Do you think we're going to abolish the minimum wage? No, I tell you, that isn't going to happen. That'll be a cold day in hell. So there isn't any hope of those 42,400 companies coming back. Now, here's what's even worse. In 1960, Americans, in our economy, 60% of our economy, in fact, it was 63%, of our gross domestic product came from manufacturing. Today it's 11%. 52% has been exported. our productive capacity, our industrial capacity today in the United States, is at about the same level that it was at the end of the Civil War. That's how much we're producing, about the same amount that America produced at the end of the Civil War. How much do we produce in the way of steel and iron, aluminum, and manufactured products, and et cetera? About the same as we produced in 1868, today. 52% of it's gone. We're not making industrial tools here in the United States. Those are all made overseas. The Japanese took over the tool-making business back in the 1980s or 70s. See, we used to make tools here in the United States. Tools, those are the things that you make products with. You got to have tool makers. You got to have machinists. Okay, all of that type of industry was moved to Japan in the 70s and 80s. That's because they could do it cheaper than we could here, and we were still practicing. You know, we got off on this tangent. We said, hey, we want to practice free trade. And we did, and we are. And here's the results of it. All right, now that's not coming back, and that's going to come back and bite us all in the butt. And all of us need to take cognizance now of the third player in the game that says this is going to lead to you eating your own children when the time is right. All right, number four, 2008. 1.2 billion cell phones were sold worldwide. So how many of those cell phones were manufactured inside the United States? And the answer was zero, not one cell phone. Now, who invented these cell phones? Who invented this internet? Who invented these computers? America? Americans? Now take a look. Well, how many jobs has this free trade, this free world trade, how many cell phone jobs has that produced in the United States? As of 2008. Now, we used to produce cell phones here. Hell, we used to produce Dell computers here, but not anymore. Now, number five, according to a new study conducted by the Economic Policy Institute, if the United States trade deficit with China continues to increase at its current rate, the U.S. economy will lose over 500,000 jobs this year. You see, this trade deficit with China, you know, and our president and our Congress and all of these lackeys, you know, in the political arena, they say, oh, we got to have free trade. Hey, we need more free trade. My God, don't you talk against free trade. Okay, I won't. I'm not. I didn't. If that's what you want, you know, get after it. But here's the results of it. Now, with this free trade, these jobs are exported. These companies are still moving, by the way. In fact, they're moving at a faster rate. Companies in America are moving out of America today at a faster rate than they were 5 years ago. So it hasn't stopped under Barack Obama. It hasn't even slowed down. It has accelerated. How do you like that? And with these trade deficits over here, we're losing 500,000 jobs a year. Number six, as of the end of July, the United States trade deficit with China had risen 18% compared to the same period a year ago. We owe them 18% more than the same period a year ago. You know, we're not talking about, you know, 0.3% and 0.4%, you know, per year. We're talking about an 18% change, a negative change for our side, positive change for them. God love them. I don't blame them, you know, for going out there and working hard and making a lot of money. But they're doing it at our expense, and we can't afford it. And our government is complicit with this program, and they're not going to slow it down or stop it, and it's unsustainable, and it's coming to an end. And boy, when this thing comes to an end. Our standard of living is going to drop like a rock, 75% overnight. Now, just take a look at how much gasoline you buy, how much food you buy, you know, what it is, where you live, and how you're living. Now, just cut your standard of living. Just take 75% off of everything that you do, everything that you consume, and there's your new standard of living. And that's if you've got a job and can maintain it at that level. Now, what about the rest of them? Kind of reminds me of this prophecy in the Scripture. Jesus made this statement. He said, if the righteous scarcely be saved, where will the ungodly and the sinner appear? If those that are working and able take a 75% cut, what in the hell is that going to do to you people that are on unemployment and lost your house and your car already? Do you remember that prophecy in Deuteronomy 28 that says you're going to be reduced to eating your own children? And don't forget this third guy in the equation here. We got the politicians in. We got the international geopolitics and the United Nations and the big businesses in the equation. Don't forget this other guy, you know, God the Creator. He comes along on the scene and says, hey guys, remember me? And we say, hell no, we forgot all about you. Get out of here. Leave us alone. And this guy wants to remind us, hey, we got a deal. You and me, partner, we got a deal. And you're behind on your payments. And then I'm about to eat your lunch, take your car, and put you out in the street. I didn't make it that way now, kids. I'm just telling you that's the way it is. So the United States has lost a total of 5.5 million jobs since October of 2000. 5.5 million manufacturing jobs. Number eight, according to tax notes between 1999 and 2008, employment at the foreign affiliates of U.S. parent companies increased an astounding 30% to 10.1 million. During the exact period of time, U.S. employment at American multinational corporations declined 8% down to 21.1 million. Now, not all these jobs are manufacturing. Let me show you what happens here. You've got computer programmers and you've got people that are in service industries. You know, like you call your internet service provider and you get somebody that speaks English all right, but they got a little accent to it. Well, that's over in India. That's an Indian. So you call up and some Indian guy or girl gives you the answer that you wanted. Well, banks are doing that. You know, you call the bank, you know, over routine things, you know, like my credit card account or something like that. Hell, you're not talking to some guy down here at the local bank. You're talking to somebody in Calcutta, India. They're outsourcing those jobs. It's actually 5.5 million manufacturing jobs, but it's double that. It's 10.5 million jobs lost since 2001. Now, Americans that are working in Silicon Valley are transferring now over to India, and they're taking big pay cuts, too. See, they're making $60,000 to $100,000 a year down there in Silicon Valley, and now they're leaving, going to India, getting $10,000 a year. They're not complaining. Their $10,000 a year in India buys more than $100,000 a year in San Francisco. So their standard of living is staying the same, but hey, it's the same thing here with Dell Computer. Dell Computers is moving to China. They're going to move a lot of Americans over there to run their computer plant in China. They're going to hire Chinese at 86 cents an hour to work in the factory instead of paying Americans $10, $15, $20. They're going to pay Chinese 86 cents. And the Americans, instead of getting paid $100,000 or $200,000 a year, they're going to get paid $10,000 or $20,000 a year in China. And they're going to live better in China than they are in San Francisco, California, or Winston-Salem, North Carolina. That's what's going on. Now, for America and Americans, that is unsustainable. But that's where we're going. So make up your mind to it. Number nine, in 1959, manufacturing represented 28% of U.S. economic output. In 2008, it represents 11.5%. Now, that number there is at variance with another number that I saw. I think this is drastically understated. 63% is the correct number. Now, that's in 1959. Well, it's 1963 or 61. 1961, it was 63%. Today, it's down to 11.5%. That number is about correct. The last number I saw in another source was 11. So, rounded off, it's 63 to 11%. And our manufacturing output today is at about the same level it was in 1868, right after the Civil War. Boys and girls, that is mind-boggling. Not only is it unsustainable, it is a death sentence for the American Empire. Just like the Roman Empire, you know, there came a point in time when it just ceased to function. The American Empire at some point in time will cease to function. You know, whether you believe me or not, or whether you're listening and paying attention or not, it's irrelevant. It isn't important. I'm not here to persuade you that I'm right. I just wanted to give you the report and tell you this is where you're at. These are the numbers. Number 10, the Ford Motor Company recently announced the closure of a factory that produces the Ford Ranger in St. Paul, Minnesota. Approximately 750 good-paying middle-class jobs are going to be lost because making Ford Rangers in Minnesota does not fit in with the Ford Company's new global manufacturing strategy. So it isn't just GM that's moving abroad. It's Ford and Chrysler also. Number 11, as of the end of 2009, less than 12 million Americans worked in manufacturing. The last time that 12 million Americans were employed in manufacturing was in 1941. So the number of Americans working in manufacturing industries are the same as they were in 1941 when we had 16% unemployment in America. Isn't that just real special? In the United States today, consumption accounts for 70% of the gross domestic product. Of this 70%, over half is spent on services. Services, not making or producing anything. It's flipping burgers. The United States has lost a whopping 32% of its manufacturing jobs since 2000. 32% of the manufacturing jobs, that's one-third, have been lost in the last 10 years. 14. In 2001, the United States ranked fourth in the world in per capita broadband internet use. Today, it ranks 15th. Got that? From fourth to 15th in 10 years. Manufacturing employment, number 15 in the U.S. computer industry, is actually lower in 2010 than it was in 1975. Get that? Manufacturing employment in the U.S. computer industry today is lower than it was in 1975 when computers were brand new. Number 16, printed circuit boards are used in tens of thousands of different products. Asia now produces 84% of them worldwide. So 84% of these computer printed boards are made in Asia now. Number 17. The United States spends approximately $3.90 on Chinese goods for every $1 that the Chinese spend on goods from the United States. So that's a deficit of $2.90, isn't it? So out of every $5 that's spent, $4 of it is being spent on Chinese goods and $1 is being spent on American goods. You know, that's within a dime. Number 18, one prominent economist is projecting that the Chinese economy will be 3 times larger than the U.S. economy by the year 2040. So take our economy today, the Chinese will be 3 times that over the next 30 years. And then finally, number 19, the U.S. Census Bureau says that 43.6 million Americans are now living in poverty. And according to them, that is the highest number of poor Americans in the past 51 years that records have been kept. So we've been keeping poverty records for 51 years. This is the highest rate. Don't you remember, just a few years back, Lyndon Johnson, you know, we were going to have the, what was it? It was the New Frontier with John F. Kennedy. And Johnson came in with this Guns and Butter program. What do you call that? I've forgotten the name of it now, but he had that. He had one of those Roosevelt-type, you know, New Frontier-type things. Or I'll think of it here in a minute. But it was a Guns and Butter program. And then today, 1975, we are now producing, we have fewer people working in our computer industry today than we did in 1975. You know, put that in your pipe and smoke it. Now, to say that this is unsustainable and that the American empire is on the decline is an understatement. And don't forget Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Remember? Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. That'll really blow your socks off. Hey, I'm out of time again. I got to give you a final reminder here that you are listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact discs, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.